perhaps controversial title is of this, subtitle of this talk is, What is a Sunspot Anyway? And you can see from this magnificent picture that was taken a year ago at La Palma, lots of things are going on in a sunspot, and I'll try and dissect them. So this is called Observations of Sunspots. So a sunspot has these dark regions that are typically around 4,000 degrees Kelvin that are called umbra. And as you can see, they're not all round. Some of them have elongated shapes. They're not simple structures. There are penumbra, which are striated structures that on average are not quite as dark as sunspots, but not quite as bright as the surrounding granulation. And I think everybody knows about these. What's a little less familiar is this thing called the moat. There's a region around the sunspot that's roughly twice the diameter of the penumbra, in which there's a general outflow. And we can see this outflow in the K-line by seeing the signature of outflowing magnetic features. And sort of a couple of decades ago, Jack Harvey measured the magnetic field coming out of the sunspot and found that it took the field of the sunspot away in less than a day, whereas sunspots lasted for months, and so there was something wrong. And finally, there's a region of enhanced emission, and this is not the K line. This is the band around 1600 angstroms in the far ultraviolet, where the temperature difference of the surface of the sun manifests itself as increased intensity. And this temperature increase is due to the presence of magnetic field. If we went to a magnetogram and made a contour map of anything between sort of 100 Gauss and sort of 30 Gauss, you'd get the same contour that outlined this boundary. And inside that boundary, you'd find that the mean field was about 200 Gauss. And regardless of the stage of evolution of the sunspots, that mean field would stay the same. The other thing about Plage is that if you believe that magnetic field is diffusing from the plage, you get yourself into trouble. So the models that Wang and Shealy have calculated over the years have never included plage, although they put flux in proportional to the sunspot flux. They somehow assume it's over a larger region, and they don't take into account the fact of the slow leakage. And the only way you can make a boundary like this is to have a containment of this field. If you merely do a kinematic model and put in diffusion with a diffusion coefficient A on the inside and B on the outside, regardless of how big you make that difference, you don't make a boundary that maintains the same flux as the region decays. The only way you can do that is by putting a reflection coefficient in. And we think the reflection coefficient is a flow. So now let's go in a little bit more detail and look at the umbra. One of the characteristics of an umbra is that there are dots inside of it. They're little regions that are locally brighter than average. They have typically lower magnetic field. This picture is a picture that's blown up quite a bit. This is a granule. So instead of seeing the 10,000 kilometer sunspot that I just showed you, these are 2,000 kilometer sunspots, and you can see that they also have umbral dots. So this, whatever this phenomenon is, it's not something that develops late in the history of a sunspot. It occurs very early.
Alan, is it my imagination, or is that these photos taken near the lip?
It's not your imagination.
Wow.
Here are pores that are just the size of the granules themselves, and they already have umbral dots. And these pictures are taken by the near the limb. And these pictures, and this comes to details. I certainly didn't mean to slight you at all. I think the stellar work that has inferred structure on stars is truly remarkable. But on the sun, the detail is somewhat greater, that we're approaching the mean free path of photons. So we're seeing about as much detail on the sun as you can see in the continuum. And because we've now gotten to the point where the resolution is on the order of 50 kilometers, we can for the first time begin to see heights in the sun, because the scale height is about 50 kilometers. Until we got to this point, we couldn't really resolve heights. Another phenomenon of sunspots are light bridges. And you can note this double structure of light bridges. This is characteristic. There's a dark line in between. And also you can notice that there's sort of little penumbra on the border of a light bridge, that it's really remarkable. If you go to the old engravings, the old woodcuts that are found in the work of Father Secchi in the latter part of the 19th century, he shows these light bridges, which we can barely see with the best resolution nowadays. Wonder if he imagined them or... And in this movie, you can see that there are flows laterally along the light bridge. There's all kinds of interesting things that are going on in the penumbra, which I'll talk about in a few moments. So the other characteristics of the umbra is that there are oscillations over the umbra. And this movie is taken in the chromosphere in H-alpha. By drawing these circles, perhaps I can draw your attention to the fact that different parts of the umbra have different velocities, different phases. In fact, that these are power maps, so this is the total power in limited temporal bands, going from around 5 millihertz to about 10 millihertz. And you can see that different parts of the umbra actually oscillate at somewhat different frequencies. And the range is a factor of 2 in frequency. So, the majority of these umbral waves are in the range of 150 to 180 seconds. They're small zones of coherent oscillation. They're related to dark cells that you see in the umbra in the photosphere. And there are sharp horizontal discontinuities between these regions of horizontal oscillation. There are large vertical velocities associated with these. And they may drive the running penumbral waves that we see and the waves that we see in coronal sunspot fans, which I'll get to in a few minutes. Finally, the magnetic fields in the umbra are relatively simple. They're nearly vertical. And their field strength ranges between 2,000 to 3,500 Gauss, with the vast majority of sunspot umbra having fields between 2,000 and 2,500 Gauss. It's only rare that you get to 3,000. The penumbra is even more exciting. There are large-scale mass motions called Evershed flows. There are intensity patterns that move that aren't associated with Doppler shift, which I call intensity flows. They have a very complex structure. They have inclined magnetic fields that cover a range of angles. They're oscillations and they're traveling waves. So, this is a picture in the continuum of the umbra of a sunspot. And this is a Dopplergram made in a magnetically insensitive line. And the limb of the sun is up here. And what you see is the primarily horizontal flow. So the tip of the tilt of the sun is sufficient to cause the flow that's nearly parallel to the surface to be on one side seen toward us and the other side going away from us. Now, this nearly parallel flow in sunspots has been known for a very long time, since the first decade of the last century. And in the 50s, it began to become a very significant problem because the magnetic field in sunspots was measured in the penumbra and found to be inclined to the horizontal by about 30 degrees or so. And by that time, people realized how conducting the sun was and how physically implausible it was to have a horizontal flow in the penumbra at the same time to have the magnetic field at 30 degrees. And so there was a lot of work, especially at Oxford, on this problem. This is a movie that very nicely illustrates the intensity flows. You can see these bright parts of the penumbra moving inward. You can also see the granules immediately around the border of the penumbra flowing outward, and also that the boundary of the penumbra is not stable at all. These penumbral fibrils are extending and contracting continuously, and because of this, there's been a lot of discussion in the literature about penumbral boundaries effects and whether something is or is not at a penumbral boundary, and all of these things are largely the result that you didn't really have enough resolution to understand that the penumbral boundary wasn't a fixed location in space. These remarkable pictures were obtained by Jørn Scharmer about a year ago. And these are penumbral fibrils, and they seem to have dark cores. And these dark cores do very strange things. If you look closely around the edges of the dark cores, you can see them bifurcate around bright spots, and I think that no one really understands what these dark cores are. This is just another movie showing that these penumbral fibrils are not simple, just dark and bright bands, but actually very complex interleaved structures. And you can see these moving out into the granule field.
Alan, excuse me. Can I?
Yes.
We don't see this fibrous structure on the dark spot on the right part of the movie. Is there a typical size where you start to see a penumbra and this fibrous structure?
That's a very good question, and we'll come to that in the next slide. This is a picture close to the limb, another part of the picture that I showed earlier. And as Pascal noted the other day, there are all these little striations in the boundaries of granules. And in particular, you can see them around these tiny pores, which are barely larger, or if any, larger than a typical granule. And so there's some kind of structure that's associated with the magnetic field that causes these little bifurcations or splittings. And so if you look at this, you know, small pore, which is 1,000 to 1,500 kilometers in diameter, you see these stripes. Are these the beginning of penumbra? Are penumbra just something that magnetic field naturally does? Magnetic field naturally wants to create this fibril kind of structure. We don't know. But it's certainly an interesting thing that is a challenge for people who do numerical simulations. This is just another picture showing movies of these kinds of phenomena. And seeing these fibril structures around pores that are barely bigger than granules.
Alan, can you actually measure the magnetic field in those dark stripes?
Yes.
And is it stronger than?
It's a kilogauss. Okay, now let's talk a little bit about inclined fields. This is a movie made with MDI of the line of sight magnetic field. And what one can see is in the penumbra, the magnetic field, the vertical component of the magnetic field, varies with this fibril-like structure that's characteristic of the penumbra. If you look at the lines themselves and measure the magnetic field strength, you find that the magnetic field strength around a circle of radius R around the umbra is essentially the same. But the vertical component of the magnetic field varies a lot. That is to say that the magnetic field around the penumbra oscillates in inclination. And there's a very nice picture in the latest Astronomy and Geophysics by Nigel Weiss that shows the picture of interdigitated magnetic fields. So they're magnetic fields that are inclined at 45 to 60 degrees to the surface, and magnetic fields that are parallel and, in fact, at the edge of the penumbra, go down below the surface. It's the Evershed flow resides in these horizontal and subducting magnetic fields. And the bright penumbral fibrils are inclined with respect to the vertical. So the magnetic field is rapidly interdigitated, rapidly changing inclination as you go around the sunspot in azimuth. So these fibrils these bright fibrils are magnetic fields that are inclined at 45 to 60 degrees with respect to the surface. And this is the edge of the penumbra. And now we'll go to the continuum and go back and just essentially blink and show you that that's the case. Here's a continuum image, and I'll draw little red lines on a couple of bright penumbral fibrils. And then I'll go to my Dopplergram and draw the same red lines. And you see that the Dopplergrams show that the flow doesn't reverse, so that these are inclined fields. Okay. So in summary, there's outward flows in the dark fibrils. The velocities are episodic, and they peak at about 5 kilometers a second. The dark fibrils are nearly parallel to the surface, and near the penumbral outer boundary, the flows dip below the surface so that they're greater than 90 degrees with respect to the vertical. The bright fibrils have intensity flows toward the umbra, but exhibit little or no mass motion, and the inclination of the bright fibrils is 50 to 60 degrees with respect to the vertical. Okay. So this is a power map. This is showing the power in the umbra, average between 99 and 200 seconds. This is the continuum again. This is the power map between 230 and 340. And you can see that largely excludes the umbra and encompasses the penumbra. This is the H-alpha line center. And this is the H-alpha Doppler, again, showing, in this case, a single picture showing a single circular wave that goes almost all the way around the sunspot. Now, for those of you who haven't seen pictures like this, it's confusing. So this is an image of the sun. Our sodium our 5576 Doppler image. This is the H alpha picture. Marked with a T is the top of this image, and a B the bottom of the image. This line, the line from top to bottom, is a Dopplergram, a slice through this Dopplergram at a given time, and this is a stack of times. And so what you can see is an outflow on this side and an inflow on that side. So this is the Evershed effect. So these are corresponding parts of the penumbra. That you can see streaks going outward from the penumbra, which I've highlighted by these blue lines to draw your attention to them. And this is characteristic of a feature moving outward. So these are features moving away from the penumbra. That seen in the chromosphere, you can see a wave pattern, and the wave pattern is tilted, showing that we have an outward propagating wave pattern, whereas in the umbra, these lines are essentially parallel, so they're propagating upward. This is another one of these slices which clearly shows the distinct phase differences between different sections of the penumbra and the fact that they get out of phase with respect to each other because they're oscillating at different frequencies. But it also shows that pretty much every other one of these oscillations, a penumbral wave is launched, and somehow there's a strange coupling between the two. So the summary of the penumbral waves is their periods around 200 seconds. They move outward at about 20 kilometers a second. They're some vertical velocity of about a kilometer a second. They appear to be driven by the umbral oscillations. They're in phase over a large part of the penumbra, and they do not extend into the superpenumbra, into the mode. Okay, what about this mode? This is another picture in the K-line, and you can see these bright features moving outward that are sites of magnetic field. If I take 2 hours of that movie and average it, this is hard to see. You see that the intensity is not uniform around the spot in the mode. Rather, there appear to be lines. And if I highlight those lines by just drawing lines on the picture, I can isolate the places where the mean intensity in the penumbra is in the mode is large over a 2 hour period. I can also calculate the RMS intensity change over this 2 hour period. And in this case, I see dark regions, dark stripes, with about the same spacing as the bright lines. And these indicate regions where the intensity isn't changing over time. And if I overlay my bright lines, I see that they're in between the dark regions. So this isn't terribly surprising that the region where the mean intensity is high is also the region where the RMS is high, because the mean intensity is being caused by moving magnetic features. I can also, using local correlation tracking, measure the horizontal flow velocity in the surface. And so these arrows have links that are proportional to the velocity, and they point in the direction of the flow. And what you see here are dark regions. And the dark regions, even if you can't see them from where you're sitting in the room, and they just look like darker than average regions and they're lighter than average regions, the dark regions are caused by the arrowheads on these arrows converging. And it shouldn't be surprising then when I draw my red lines, that the red lines correspond to the convergence region of these cells. So these look to be like convective rolls in the moat region. So the moat region has two things going on. One is there's a general outward flow, and superimposed on that are convective rolls. And these convective rolls are separated by about 15 degrees in angle, and they're persistent. And they're part of the flow system that's associated with the sunspot. In each one of these little circles, you'll see a distinctive pattern. There's a dark blob, and immediately after the dark blob appears, two little bright points appear at its end. And this is a signature of emerging flux beneath the surface. The dark blob is due to the rising horizontal flux tube that's locally overdense, and as it rises into the upper photosphere, it drains, and then you see the Keating characteristic of a vertical flux structure. So, and if you measure the magnetic field in these little bright blobs, you find that the magnetic field has the same sign in the interior edge as the sunspot. So the picture is that a flux tube has dipped beneath the surface and then emerged up and then come back down. And then there's this little hemorrhage in the magnetic field travels outward to the moat. And so no magnetic field is being transferred, that just little bipoles are moving continuously out to the edge of the moat. And it implies that the magnetic field from the sunspot the horizontal component of the magnetic field really is actually emerging around this boundary in this super penumbral boundary.
Excuse me, is that explaining Jack Harvey's observations, or have I missed the point?
It does explain Jack Harvey's observations. And you're not missing the point. You seldom do. Okay, I mentioned this earlier, that part of the sunspot phenomena is the large-scale flow pattern that's associated with it. We've seen the umbra and the penumbra and the moat, but I think the flow pattern is much larger than that. That this plage has a uniform magnetic field. Another feature of the plage is the 5-minute oscillation is suppressed. And it's suppressed not only in the magnetic field. If you draw the boundary of the plage, which has a filling factor of something like 20 or 30%, you find that the entire boundary, the entire 5-minute oscillation, is suppressed, averaged over that boundary by a little bit more than a factor of 2. So it can't be just where the magnetic field is. The 5-minute oscillation is suppressed everywhere in the plage. There's reduced magnetic diffusion, and there's a surrounding large-scale structure, which I'll talk about. And there's an internal large-scale structure as well. This is a flow map that's probably hard to see, but it's made from the MDI helioseismological data from the F mode, and the F mode is a free surface wave mode, and it extends in depths about 2 kilometers. And you can see flows going into this active region.
2 megameters.
2 megameters. That's right. Sorry. And so that the entire plage, the entire active region, is embedded in a large-scale flow that's containing it. So if we're talking about flux ropes, that there's a large-scale flow system that's associated with the emergence of flux from below the surface. It's not just some localized flux tube that's associated with a sunspot that then somehow diffuses. It's a much, much larger system. So, with the advent of spacecraft that can observe for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for long periods of time, for the first time we've been able to look at questions like sunspot emergence, sunspot decay, mote emergence, mote decay. And so we can make an image in white light. And this is a nice stable spot. This spot is disappearing. In this region, new spots are appearing. And in this case, the penumbra is disappearing. This nice movie shows all these three things happening at once. In all of these regions, we see mote flow. So the stable spot has mote flow. The spot with a disappearing penumbra has mote flow. The disappearing spot has mote flow. And as you see these guys appear, you'll see mote flow. So this is a phenomena that's associated with sunspots from their earliest appearance until they disappear. You know, the penumbra is gone on this guy now, and it still has mote flow. These are magnetic maps of that region. This is a complex spot group that occurred just recently. And if you look closely, you can see that these spots are rotating. You watch this boundary. I guess I was told yesterday that some people don't like spots to rotate, which is unfortunate. And come on. The point of this is that this complex group also exhibits mote flow. For those people who are technically interested in sunspots, that it's often thought that the magnetic field lines that go into the corona aren't filled or heated over umbra, and this particular umbra gives one of those umbra that disobey the rules. So this is a movie of the atmosphere above this active region. It was responsible for a bunch of big flares. You can see large-scale reconnection. And you can see these loops that suddenly appeared actually marched right into the center of the umbra and are still coming right out of the center of the umbra. And if we draw a little circle and show the movie again and again, backwards and forwards, you can see that the foot points of these loops moving from the penumbral boundary, penumbra-umbra boundary deep into the umbra. For those of you who didn't believe that sunspots rotate from the previous example, I'm running this movie backwards and forwards. And you can tell that from this little clock, but now it's... anyway. No. That's forwards.
How common is that behavior?
It's not uncommon. We've got dozens of examples now, and Rich Nightingale and has written a bunch of papers on these things.
Is it the same vorticity as the differential rotation?
What?
Does it tell in the same sense as the differential rotation? Is it the same vorticity?
Yes, although sometimes sunspots rotate in the opposite direction and sometimes they even change direction. Now, I shouldn't have told you that. I should have waited till you wrote a paper. Yes?
It looks in your movie that, in a sense, there's a coalescence process at work. That the big guy is, in some sense, eating some of the little guys. Is that a bit too much of a push of an interpretation?
No, I think it's exactly what happens. And that perhaps in the next few examples, you'll see what happens. But as flux emerges through the surface, it emerges over an area, and to a large extent, it coalesces. And so there, in fact, is a flow in the initial stages of flux emergence of field in toward the location that the spot eventually will appear. And so there is coalescence. The polarity of this little guy who's running into this big spot is the same as the spot. So this is a coalescence process. This flux isn't disappearing and canceling or whatever. Just to beat this mote flow, that you can see mote flow around the rotating spot. I wish my computer wouldn't do this. You can see mote flow about this spot. You can see mote flow about that spot. So, you know, and I haven't picked these. And in fact, I have with me DVDs that have the entire sunspot cycle, both in the continuum and the magnetic field. And you can look for yourself for these kinds of phenomena. Now, what I find very interesting is that the magnetic fields that are rotated with these spots, attached to these spots, rotate with them. And so you can see these magnetic fields rotate. But they can only rotate so far before the magnetic topology in a potential field configuration fundamentally changes. So these rotate around so far, and then the whole system reconfigures. And this happens in a potential field calculation. It's very easy to understand. I'll draw a picture with my hands in a few minutes. But if I have a pair of... I have one's polarity here, and another pair of opposite polarity there. So long, I can rotate this as much as I can rotate this around until I get to the point where I begin to cross the line between centers, and then all the field lines that originally went here in this configuration will go there in a potential field calculation. So from a potential field point of view, when I go from this situation to that situation, I have to change all of my field line connections, essentially. And that's essentially what's happening in these field lines that are drawn here by God. Here's another sunspot evolution. Here are emerging spots, and you can see this coalescence process field running into each other. More emerging spots. Oh, and too bad. And disappearing spots. Okay, go back. And again, you can see this lone spot, and just as they emerge, the mote appears. The mote flow appears. But this is. So, this flow is a property associated with flux emergence. And that's all I really wanted to say at this point.
Can one measure the smoothing component of the magnetic field in those rotating spots?
Yes, you can.
Vector magnetograms.
Yes. And we don't have very many vector magnetograms. This situation will change in 2 years, where we're flying essentially a complete Stokes polarimeter on a Japanese spacecraft. And that also will fly in one of these 24/7 polar orbits. And so we'll be able, for the first time, to get the time evolution of the complete vector field of sunspots to the extent that we understand line formation well enough to interpret the measurements.
I have a comment and then a brief plug. The comment is that I admit that I was the person that told Alan I didn't want the spot to rotate. It's not because I don't believe they rotate, it's because I don't want to have to put another term in my equations. And the plug is that on my talk on sunspots on Friday and Monday, I'll be actually giving theoretical interpretations of almost all of the various phenomena that you discussed, Alan. So thank you for covering all the beautiful.
Well, I'll thank you then when you've explain this all.
I said I would discuss them. I'm not sure I will explain everything. No, the rotation is, I said almost all of them. I'm not going to explain the rotation.
Yes, I've purposely left some things unsaid in this talk because I know that Sasha and Jack are going to talk about flows beneath the surface. The really, I think, most exciting things that are coming out of helioseismology are the results of acoustic tomography, time distance measurements, where we can actually now begin to explore the flow field beneath the sunspot. And again, in 2008, we'll have a helioseismatic imager that will produce both vector fields and flow fields with the capability that MDI has in its high resolution field all over the surface. So we'll be able in just a very few years to understand how the flow fields beneath the surface evolve.
In one of your slides at the beginning of the talk, I think I saw that you said the penumbral outflow would be episodic. You say that the Evershed flow is episodic?
Yes, the Evershed flow is episodic.
But in the next slide, you showed the time slice diagram, and you could see it's fairly steady.
Huh. I wonder why it says I'm now running on reserve power.
Oh,
Yeah, you can say both. that there is a general steady flow, that the flow generally doesn't go to zero, but it has episodic, it has episodes in which the flow increases rapidly for periods of on the order of 5 to 10 minutes in individual penumbral fibrils. And these interpretations are at much lower resolution than the observations I've shown here today. And what is covered and uncovered by these motions of the bright penumbral fibrils, once we begin to make spectrograms to actually measure the velocity and measure the magnetic field, we may have some different views of what these flow systems are like. That, you know, we may be in the same position that the Oxford group was in 1950, where they didn't have sufficient resolution. It wasn't because people weren't clever. They were very, very clever. But they simply didn't have the resolution to distinguish the difference between the bright fibrils and the darker fibrils. Now that we have all this resolution, I'm beginning to call into question some of our... how complex this intermingling really is. You know, maybe we're fooling ourselves a little bit.
Is there any evidence to support or kill a hypothesis that the larger sunspots form by the kind of progressive aggregation or coalescence of smaller fibrils?
I think my picture, based on observations, is that the flux emerging from the surface fragments before it reaches the surface. And reaches the surface. It's got to do something like this. You see these sunspots separated initially by a substantial distance. And so field is immediately below the surface from the two places where you're going to have umbra or local concentrations are largely horizontal. So it breaks through the surface in a bunch of little bits. And in fact, when you have very good resolution, it looks as if you took a standard ribbon cable that you have on a computer and sliced it up, and so you made little wires of magnetic field, and then put convection under it, so you pull little blobs out. So what happens are bipoles emerge in this region, and the positive end of that bipole goes to the positive center, and the negative goes to the negative center. And in fact, so many of them emerge that there are crossings that occur. Or in fact, flux emerges on the same flux line in two places. So you have a positive, a negative, a positive, and a negative, and they run toward each other trying to get home to mother, so to speak, and cancel each other. And we've got a few data sets that look like that, but it requires very good resolution spatially and temporally. This will all be fixed in 2006.
So that was a fantastic lecture, full of very interesting information, but it went so fast that I've missed a few points, I think. Could you say whether I'm right? When you were looking at those, talking about those spokes coming up and forming something else out from the sunspot, this is different, therefore, what you see in granules.
Yes. But they're bright for a different reason. So perhaps I shouldn't. I should be a little bit more careful. I should always be a little bit more careful. These bright lines are the bright trails of magnetic field that is leaving in the K-line. I haven't tried to see what these things look like in the photosphere. But since the magnetic field is always in the granulation boundaries, that I bet there is a faint signature in the photosphere that's slightly darker. But because the granulation, because in the K-line the magnetic field is spread so that it's an arc second or so, and in the continuum the granule boundary that they're in is 2/10 of an arc second, and so you're going to have a very crenellated patch in the photosphere that it may be that you can't distinguish it in the photosphere, whereas it's distinguishable in the chromosphere.
Can you see bright boundaries of the granules in the K-line?
No.
Just what's this distribution as a function of size of the sunspots? What's the biggest sunspot that pop up or the umbra or penumbra? I don't know where you stop the characteristic size of sunspot, and the smallest one. Or what do you divide between sunspot and pores for the small scale? And you have an idea of the distribution over a cycle? Or?
I showed yesterday the distribution function of active regions. And that's pretty much the distribution function of sunspot diameters. Perhaps one of the most fascinating things about umbra is this result of Permalti, that the temperature of umbra, regardless of the size, varies over the solar cycle. And it's something that I've never seen anybody discuss why that might be, and it might be another interesting clue for people who make dynamo models.
What's the sign?
Oh, now that's a really nasty question.
I didn't mean it to be.
I know, but it is, because it's embarrassing. I don't really know. I don't remember. But I think that they get progressively darker through the cycle.
No, they get brighter.
What?
Yeah, they get brighter.
They get brighter. See, if you guess, that's what happens. But it's not something that's discussed.
It has not been confirmed by other observations, so it might not be true anyway.
Oh, you think that that's possible?
I was told so by observers.
There's stuff that I think is still unpublished from San Fernando, Gary Chapman's group, and they failed to confirm that, so I think that's kind of up in the air, but it is brighter. That the Malpe result was that it gets brighter through the activity increases.
Contraintuitive.
Bob?
Yeah. Could you say something about what happens at the photospheric level in the spots when the magnetic field lines that go into the corona get activated, when you see basically plasma loading at the coronal level of field lines that go into the umbra? Is there something special that happens in the sunspot at that time?
I don't think so. I think that what's happened, and what happened in this movie, was there was a large-scale reconfiguration of the field during a flare that these magnetic field lines exist all the time, and we've done something to put a lot more heat into the other end. And that just gone down and got into the spot. And generally, the mechanism that puts heat into the foot point of the loop doesn't occur in the spot because of the suppressed convection. And it's only under these unusual conditions that this occurs.
I seem to recall that in the Skylab days, there were lots of observations in the EUV that over a sunspot, you see downflows at the transition region and close to the lower coronal level, which is always interpreted as activity driven elsewhere, and you had the cooling material falling back up down into the spot. So is what you're saying, that is that consistent with that picture?
It isn't inconsistent.
Okay, I think that's probably it. Thank you very much, Alan, again.